part of our problem. When we run into problems, we don't think about it too much. It's the water that we swim in. It's the air that we breathe. We're born communicating. And in fact, everything in the cosmos communicates. And that's because the God who created everything is a communicative God. He still speaks. He speaks through His Word. He speaks through His creation. He speaks loudly. He speaks softly. And when He doesn't speak, or when we don't hear Him, that's when the anxiety and the pressure and the worry starts to come in. We're reading through Job. Now, if you're reading through the Bible and the Bible reading plan through the year, we're in Job. And the silence of God in the midst of Job's suffering really is the hardest part for Job. Not to mention his friends, you know, talking about communication. His friends were great for that 7 days when they just sat with Job and didn't say anything, and they just mourned with Job. The problems came when they started to speak. And so communication is an issue that is very familiar and yet foreign at the same time. One of the issues, like I said, is that it's the water that we swim in. But that doesn't mean that it can't be studied. And part of the thing that we're going to talk about today, just for a little brief part, is an academic exercise in what communication is when you break it down to its constituent parts. But before we get into that, I was doing some research for it. There's a lot to read and a lot to study on communications from both religious and secular sources, apart from what the Bible has to say. But one of the best places that I know for research on this topic was, I just did a quick search of the headlines from the Babylon Bee. Here's a headline. Husband's perfect communication causes fight. Wife keeps wanting to have a conversation with her husband, but she doesn't even listen to his podcast. Foolish husband doesn't know whenever you get a chance means right now. Man thoughtfully responds to his wife's 9-paragraph text about her day with a thumbs up emoji. And then this last one, husband and wife spend romantic evening sending each other memes. So there obviously some truth in some of that. That's why it's funny. But you can also see where some of the problems, some of them can come from. So my goal in this class is to, one, briefly discuss what communication is, what are its elements, how we employ those elements, some of the unique challenges we face in marriage as it relates to communication. We're going to look at what the Bible has to say about communications in general, and then hopefully we're going to be able to derive some principles from that survey that we can employ in the context of marital relationships. And if there's time for questions, we'll do that at the end. And the reality of it is, I could probably just open the floor. For most of us in here, we've lived this, for good or for ill, and you guys know more about this than probably I do in some extents or some context. Forgive me if I'm a little nervous. I had a lot going on the last few months, and I feel a little disjointed today, so silently be praying for me. We think that communication is just words, right? If I just put the right words in the right order, then I've communicated. But that's not the case, is it? What else is involved in communication? Okay. So we've got words. We got body language. What? Actions. Tone. Timing. Timing is everything. Just had a conversation at the Y yesterday with a guy about timing. What else?
Attitude.
Temperament. Oh, yeah, everybody's a little different, aren't we? What else?
Place.
Location. Yep. Ah, that's a good one. I'm going to save that one to the very last. Got a little surprise for you on location. Anything else?
Frequency.
You're talking about. Oh, dagging. Because yeah. What? Yeah, yeah. Right? When you say when you get time means right now. Right? Okay, so can I use it nagging? Because timing's already up here. Frequency. Yeah, we'll just do frequency. We'll just use frequency. Yeah, how many times do I need to say this? I got you Mother's Day present last year. What do you need another one for?
I think for the wife, frequency,
you may want to add that. Okay. Frequency and nagging. All right. Is there anything else?
How about means? Like, is it face to face? Is it texting?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. What's that? What is the medium? Is the message? Right. So, can we put medium? There's a lot in there. Yeah.
My most common response to a text my wife sends me is that.
Thumbs up, yeah. Yeah, I actually am a fan of emojis, but. Don. Meter.
Cadence.
All right. It's one thing for a drill sergeant to say drop and fit, give me 50. It's another for your husband to say that, right? And what else?
Silence.
Silence. Ooh. Yikes. Silence. The silence is deafening. How about code. You can have all of this, but if you don't have the code, you're not communicating. Anybody seen Elf? The movie Elf. All right. You know the scene that I'm going to go to with this, with code? Michael, the little brother, and Buddy, right? They've kind of formed a bond now, and Michael knows that Buddy kind of has the eyes for Jovi, right? So Michael's trying to coach him on what he needs to do, right, with Jovi. And so they're in the department store, and Michael says, "You need to ask her out for a date." And he goes, "Date? What do you mean, date?" He goes, "You know, go eat food. You know, the code. It's a girl's code. Food." Oh. So she comes up, and Elf goes, "You want to eat food?" And she's like, "Food?" He goes, "You know, the code." Right? Talking the same. They understand the words, but the code's not the same. Right? Another story, 1942, The battle in the Pacific is raging and the Americans are not doing well. And a young missionary kid decides he has an idea. He's not a young kid anymore. He's grown up. But he grew up on the Navajo Reservation in Arizona as an MK. And in 1929, his father and a couple of Navajo leaders went to Washington, D.C. to talk to Teddy Roosevelt about getting better conditions and better treatment for the Navajo. And this little kid, his name's Philip Johnson, served as a translator. The little kid grew up on the reservation, spoke fluent Navajo, and translated. Fast forward now to 1942, the Marines are having a hard go of it, and he has an idea that perhaps they could use the Navajo language as a code. So he convinces the people, the higher-ups, to give this a shot. They give it a shot, and they pull 29 Navajos, and they send them through basic training in the Marine Corps, and then they come up with a language based on Navajo. Not a language, but words, right? Because there's not a word in Navajo for tank, or a word for battleship, or a word for submarine, or a word for ammunition, or whatever, right? And so they take Navajo, make these words up, and teach it to these Navajo Marines to see if it's a working concept. And they put it together, they put on a demonstration. They have a Navajo that's not part of any of this, that speaks Navajo, obviously. He's listening over the radio as these guys are going back and forth with instructions for unit movement and deployments and all these other kind of things. The Navajo understands what they're talking about. He understands the words. He has no concept about what they're doing. So they said, concept is proven. We're going to deploy these guys. And so in every major battle in the Pacific, Navajo code talkers were with the Marines. They started with 29, and eventually they worked up to couple of hundred within the Marine Corps. In every major battle, they were there. And so they had one Navajo on one end with the command post. They had another Navajo or two or three Navajos, depending on what the unit deployment was, out in the front with these guys. And they were coming back and forth, calling in bombardment and airstrikes and all kinds of things. And the Japanese never broke the code. And so you have to have the code. You have to understand what the words you're talking about imply. Does that make sense? So, when you look at communication, you have a sender, and you have a receiver. And you actually have them on both ends, right? Because the whole point of communication is what? The whole point of communication is to relay a message so that an action or an attitude or something else can be relayed. And I can talk all day I want, all day, every day I can talk. But if the receiver isn't getting what I'm saying, I haven't communicated. Right? Now, this is the basic, right? So I send the message, the receiver gets it, the receiver interprets what I've said, and then sends it back. And then I get that, and I interpret that, and I say, nope, that's not what I meant, and I send it again. Receives it, interprets it, sends it back. Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Makes sense? Now all these things come into here. Right? This is called the channel. This arc here, that's the channel. All these little black marks, all this over here, this is noise. Right? You get a lot of noise mixed into the message so that the message isn't received. Right? And so part of it is you've got to make sure that the noise is taken out as best you can. The other thing about this, the word is heterophilus or heterophilus. The more different The more difference between the sender and the receiver, the bigger that difference is, the harder the communication is, right? Men and women, is there any difference? No, not a bit. And yet, obviously there is, right? The other thing too is, so temperament, right? That's neither, we all are different. We all respond differently. We all hear things differently. Body language, there's a lot of noise that can be generated in body language so that the words that you're saying don't match, right? A roll of the eyes or an eye slant or a slight grin in the moment, right? That all communicates something. It either coordinates with what you're actually sending, or it's something underneath, something subtle, which is actually the truer communication. You can look at different statistics, but about 90% of all communication is body language and tone. 10% is words. So it's important that your body language, your tone, matches what you want to say. Okay, so that's just some of the academic parts of that. Any questions about any of that? The other thing too is the more important the message, the more accurate you need to be in your communications, right? Some things are trivial in the larger context of life. Do you need me to stop at this store and get something on the way home? Yes, no. Right, that's kind of trivial, right? What do you think we should do about educating our kids? How should we go about that? That's not as trivial, right? It doesn't take much time to answer the question, do you need me to go get something at the store? Doesn't take a lot of time. Talking about the education of the kids, that takes a lot of time, right? And so the communication needs to match that, right? You need to put in the time and the effort when you talk about the more important things. Now, sometimes people want to make everything important, and it's just, you got to talk about that too. Hey, this is not that important, right? But having said that, sometimes it is important to one or the other person, right? And so you may have information that, like, I already know that this really isn't important, and you're operating off of this unknown information to the other person, right? So you need to communicate why this is not that important, right? Or vice versa, now this is really important, and I need to tell you why this is important, right? So it's a dance. It really is a dance. And in order to dance well, you have to know your partner. I think that was it on that. The only other thing I would add to this list is through family of origin. We learn to communicate based on where we grew up and how we grew up and how we watched other people in our families grow up. Sometimes we had good models, sometimes we didn't have good models. So all these things come in to a marriage or to a relationship. And as followers of Christ, we need to be able to weed some of this out, fine-tune some of this. Some of this takes a lot of effort. Some of it takes a lot of self-reflection and self-understanding in order to be able to make sure that you're doing this as best as you possibly can. Yes, sir.
I spent the vast majority of my life being taught. Bottom line up front, right? The whole story, want to give the subject and then the supporting information. So you always, you know, it's a mystery mag, it's a mystery book. You give the answer to the mystery, and then you explain how you got there. I've done that in the military. I've done that in the civilian world. My job always required me to tell you what's wrong, and then how we're going to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Bump into somebody I can't think of right now who wants to take the more scenic route to get to a story. There is nothing more aggravating. They're like, well, you just get to the point, you know. What do you want me to do? And tell me, do I need to water the yard? Do I need to feed the dog? I don't even know what time it is in Cleveland, all right? This is working. It's hard to put a leash on that because you realize that at that point, speaking of temperament, there's nothing you can say at this point that's going to end well for you.
Right.
Right? It's going to come off as rude, uncaring, but it's also aggravating from the other side of the street.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're like, okay, it's been 45 minutes. I still don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah. 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 yes, there's a chuckle. I have to think about this. Some of this is, some of it's timing, some of it's temperament, some of it is code, right? Words and this, the difference. This is apocryphal, but I read it somewhere sometime. Somebody said that women speak 10,000 words a day or something like that. And so guys' ears gets tired because they can't process that. I don't know if that's true or not, but I think, you know, that's just a difference, I think, in the way, generally speaking, men and women communicate. I mean, as an ER doc, I like to know what the problem is. And if I have questions beyond what the problem is, I'll ask them, right? But that doesn't work it just doesn't work. And so part of it's experience, right? The longer you're married, right? And the long husbands live with your wives in an understanding way, right? That's what the Lord tells us. We need to do that. We need to learn that. We also need to understand our own self. But yes, all these things are true. 1 Peter 4:8 says, above all, keep loving one another earnestly, since love covers a multitude of sins. Right? At the end of the day, love your spouse. Right? Love him, love her, because it will cover a multitude of sins. We had a conference, you know, a few months ago, hills to die on. Not every hill is worth dying on. And so it's important that we understand what's important and what's not important. Can I let this offense go? Love covers a multitude of sins. To the 10,000 words, Proverbs 10:19 says, when words are many, transgression is not lacking, but whoever restrains his lips is prudent. So, not every situation calls for a deep explanation. And sometimes, if the timing is wrong, a brief summary is sufficient. And you can go in later to fill that out. Proverbs 16:24. Gracious words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the body. If you see your spouse is having a hard day, a rough day, gracious words are like a honeycomb, right? So learn to read the room. Whoever restrains his word has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. Proverbs 12, there is one whose rash words are like sword thrusts. We've all been on the receiving end of sword thrusts, haven't we? And some of us are very good at sword fighting. But the tongue of the wise brings healing. Truthful lips endure forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment. Anxiety in a man's heart weighs him down, but a good word makes him glad. You can see the power of words. If there's any question about the power of words, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And God said, let there be light, and there was light. Right? Let there be light. That's it. And all of a sudden, the light is there. The power of words to transform for good or for ill is unmatched. The little phrase I learned as a kid, I don't know if that's still going around or what, but sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Well, that's a lie, right? That's a lie straight from the pit, actually. And so our words have a tremendous amount of power, especially in the relationships that we hold dear and hold close. Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. In the midst of a fight, to de-escalate the fight, offer a soft word. Offer a word of encouragement. This is hard. This feels out of control, but I want you to know I love you. And then step away, right? And return at a later time. Ephesians 5:33, however, let each one of you love his wife as himself. Let the wife see that she respects her husband. Right? Respect and love are shown in a variety of ways. But if you are constantly rolling your eyes, smiling in kind of a sardonic kind of a smile, if you are harsh in your tone, if you are demeaning or belittling in the words that you use, you are not respecting and you are not loving. And that goes both ways, right? Let each one of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. And one of the most practical ways that you can do that is in your language. Keeping in mind that language is only 10% of words. Here's another one. Proverbs 15:4. A gentle tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness in it breaks the spirit. Again, right, the power of words. You can literally break someone's spirit by what you say to them. And it can be just an offhand comment. You may not even realize that what you have done has now broken her spirit or his spirit. And it can affect them for a long time. We'll just say it that way. Just as a personal note, not to get too in the weeds with it, but as a little kid, I was, I don't know, probably kindergarten or something, and I remember standing in the garage with my grandfather, and I said, the conversation went somewhere to like, what are you going to do or what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, I want to be a doctor. And he said, you're not smart enough to be a doctor. And that, I mean, I still carry that now. It's a constant fight in my mind, in my spirit, right? And I've had a lot of experience being a doctor. But I can see the picture. I can feel the emotion. I can feel the crush in my spirit. And he didn't mean anything by it. He just had, that's what he thought. Right? You see your kids as kids. You don't see them as president of the United States or a United States senator or the CEO of their company or whatever. You don't see them that way. And when you speak that kind of thing to them, they believe you. And so perverseness in the tongue breaks the spirit. Proverbs 25:11, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a setting of silver. In the midst of a conflict, Matthew 18 applies, I think. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you have gained your brother. The principle on this one, keep short accounts. Don't make a laundry list of grievances over the years or the months or whatever. If something really bothers you, something has hurt you, go to that person, your husband or your wife, and say, listen, I need to talk to you about this, right? Make sure that the timing, right? If whoever you're going to talk to has come in from an excruciating day, that's not the time, right? Because you want to make sure that this noise is canceled and that they're hearing what you're sending, right? So just, again, be aware of all these different things. Matthew 7. How can you say to your brother, "Let me take the speck out of your eye," when there is a log in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye, then you'll see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Sometimes the issue is more the offended party's problem than it is the offender. Does that make sense? Sometimes you have a log in your eye. You can't see because of this thing. And it could be one of these issues, right? It could be your temperament. It could be who knows what. But so a self-check before you start going and pointing and pushing the finger. James 4:1. What causes quarrels and what causes fights among you? Is it not this, that your passions are at war within you? This is a gut check for a lot of us. The word passions, not necessarily emotions. The word translated here as passions is actually desires, right? It's not that your desires are at war within you. You really want this. You really want this other thing. You really want to go here. You really want to have X, Y, and Z, right? And the other person is the wall that you're trying to get through. And so you take it out on this person when it is actually the desire within you is at war. And so understanding that dynamic is also important when you're talking about communications in marriage. It's a lot of stuff, isn't it? This is a lot to kind of process and take in. And the reason that is because human beings are created in the image of God. And human relationships are extremely messy. Extremely messy. And so it is a process. This is not something you're going to wake up in the morning and say, "Oh, it all makes sense now. I can communicate perfectly." It's a process that you're going to learn over and over again, through the help of the Holy Spirit and patience with yourself and with your loved one. Questions on any of that? I've communicated well. Message has been sent and received, and you guys know exactly what I'm trying to get across, right?
Two different people can say the same thing in the same way. They carry different weight. There's a gravitas sometimes to someone saying it versus somebody else. The young son says something in the exact same way, the same thing that the dad says, carries a different weight. That's part of communicating. And this may be where the action is going, but integrity. Do you follow through your words? There's kind of way that your life will.
Yeah. Great points. Yeah. Do you walk the walk, right? Yeah. Yes, and exactly right. The gravitas part, right? Had a kid told me, "Hey, you're not smart enough." Like, "You're an idiot." But my grandfather, right? Totally different ballgame, right? Yeah, thanks. Anybody else?
I would add one more, is expectations. That's, for instance, Jeff, say you and I are together, we're doing something, but say we're at the gym and we're working out and we're carrying on a conversation. You don't expect me and I don't expect you to always looking you in the eye. But if I'm carrying on a conversation with my wife, there's an expectation that if I'm not hearing, if I'm not having constant eye contact, And I carry that over because I notice it in the gym also. Guys can work out and be talking, but women always stop and it's eye to eye. They never are working out while they're talking. It's just kind of interesting. Expectations.
That's exactly right. Yes. My conversation with the guy yesterday about timing was all just side talking, right? We were working, we're just, yeah, exactly. The point of expectation, right? I think that, I didn't mention that earlier, but that's a great point. And I think that's part of where this, the battle of the desire comes in. A person's expectation can be completely different than the other person's expectations. What is your plan for the day? Right? I don't know. The answer to that is what do you have for me to do? But the expectation, right? The expectation needs to be said out loud. I think that's a huge point in interpersonal communications. Put your expectations out on the table so that everybody knows where you're coming from, right?
I know that she'll say something like, you know, I'm off next week, Tuesday. Like, it doesn't mean anything to me. What she's actually saying is,
it should, though.
I want to do something next week, Tuesday. It would be so much simpler if she said, I'm off next week, Tuesday. Let's go out to lunch.
Yeah.
Now, I can answer that one easy.
Yeah.
Right? Me trying to figure out what she wants me to do next week, Tuesday is a whole different ballgame.
She wants you to ask her.
I don't want to.
Okay. So, this illustrates one of my points perfectly. Hey, when you need help, ask for help, right? Ask for help. Don't wait till the car is about to go over the cliff. And then you're like, hey, I need some help. Can't help. Pray. Here's some principles. Pray and pray often. And pray together, right? Because marriage pictures Christ and the church, marriage is a particularly sweet target for the evil one, right? So you need to be prayed up and pray together. Keep short accounts, quick to forgive. Ephesians 4:26, don't let the sun go down on your anger, right? Diffuse the heat before you go to bed, right? You may not solve the problem, but diffuse the heat. Husbands, live with your wife in an understanding manner. Be a student of your wife. Sometimes, you know, and I know this, I don't know the circles well enough, but there was a book several years ago that I thought was very useful, very handy, because it is true, because our temperaments are different, because our how we were raised is different, because there is a code, right? And we have to understand the code, the five love languages. How do you love your wife? Well, I love you, honey. That sometimes is enough. Words of affirmation, quality time, physical touch, acts of service, and receiving gifts, right? The five love languages. There's some, we won't go into all of that, but I think that's a useful rubric at times. Wives, respect your husbands. Use care in the words you use, the tone of your voice, your body language. There's a lot of talk about men using eye control. Keep your eyes under control. I think that applies to women, but perhaps in a different manner. It's equally important that we understand there's more to language, more to communication than just words. Get your expectations on the table. Avoid global statements. You always, you never, right? Avoid those. That's a nuclear weapon. Second person pronoun, you. That puts the other person on the defensive, right? You said this, you said that, you did this, you did that. In other words, a way to do something similar, but has a completely different feel. I heard what you said, and this is what I thought I heard. I saw this. Help me understand what was going on, right? Something like that. Take a time out if you feel the temperature's getting too hot. Be sure you're both well rested, right? Especially for important heat, potentially heat generating topics. Make sure you're well rested. Make sure the timing is right. Make sure that you get some food in you, right? Make sure you're not hungry. Make sure that there's not a bunch of stuff pressing in on you when you're trying to have a conversation. Take these things and go lock them away. Don't have this out when you're trying to have an important conversation or perhaps just a conversation. Don't be sending memes when you're having a romantic evening. Take a time out. Be sure you're well rested. And then when all else fails, location, wherever it was, location. This is weird, and I'm going to say it. I thought, I'm not going to say it, but I thought I am going to say it. Location. You know, this, and just keep in mind, this is not Brian Moats' lecture, so I'm not talking about this. When you get to an impasse, and it really is just like, go stand in the shower together. It's weird. But I'm telling you, there is something about the shower that disarms all defenses and opens up communication. I don't know how, I don't know why, but I'm telling you that it works. Okay? So, and all else fails, hit the showers. And right. And then if it works out, then we can go to Brian Moats for what to do next. Okay? Brian.
Shower, remember your baptism.
Remember your baptism. That's excellent. Any questions? Comments? Yes, sir. Yep. Yeah, that's right. That's a good word. Thank you. Anybody else? Caleb?
What would you say about changes from one person to
another? I think, yeah, the question is how do you change things if you're going from one just individual communication to a group communication? That's a good question. I mean, I think most of these principles apply, right? You got to know who you're talking to. You got to know something about the group that's there. You've got a clear message that you want to present to somebody. And so you got to think through how you're going to present to that group as a whole. And then making sure, like, you know, you've slept well, making sure you've had something to eat, all these other kind of things that could throw some noise in on the channel as you're trying to communicate. Lindsay? Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And then he at least comes in ready and has time to gather his thoughts and he can do dinner on Friday and discuss the heart of his education. And I recognize early in our marriage with friends is that my eyes have been lack of preparation for the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great word. Expectations. Make sure the expectations are out there. Let's close. Father, we thank you for the day you've given us. Go with us now as we come into worship. I pray that we can worship you, that you would enable us to worship you in word and spirit. Be with Rich as he brings word and sacrament to us. We ask your blessing on this time, Father, in Christ's name. Amen. It's not.